Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your deadly program, National Talk Black, the Murray from the Curry, live from the First Nation radio station here in Cairns. It's Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, and taking it right through 12 noon Queensland time here on National Talk Black. The deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land we broadcast from, and to all our traditional owners across the deadly country of ours, welcome back to National Talk Black. Have your saying yarn up strong. If you're on a shy side, you can text a brother on 045-714-0550 and check out our Facebook page as well, BBM987FM. All right, we're going to jump straight in. We're going to catch up over yarn there with the new CEO for Reef Restoration Foundation, and the man's name is Ryan Donnelly, who's come to join me here in the studio. Ryan, a very good morning. How are you?
Oh, very well, thanks, Trevor. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Congratulations on your new appointment.
Thank you.
And give us a bit of background. Who's Ryan Donnelly?
Okay, look, I've come to Reef Restoration Foundation after 14 years in the marine aquarium industry on the Great Barrier Reef and in the Coral Sea, where I've been doing business development, but I've also led the industry body through a transition to a stewardship approach to the use of the coral reefs on the Great Barrier Reef.
Okay.
And integration of research into informing the management of those fisheries. In between time, I did spend a couple of years at the Reef and Rainforest Research Centre, administering the Great Barrier Reef program of the National Environmental Research Program, and you can trace my involvement with coral reefs back to the late 90s in the Solomon Islands and in Indonesia.
Fantastic. So a bit of a fantastic background there, and a bit of information to bring us up to speed into your new appointment as the new CEO for Reef Restoration Foundation. First of all, let the mob know, Reef Restoration Foundation, who are they and what they're about?
Okay. Reef Restoration Foundation is a startup social enterprise that started back in 2016 with three large-hearted people who wanted to make a difference. And they saw that there was an opportunity for local people to get in and help the reef to recover on the back of those back-to-back bleaching events in 16 and 17, and that the process of reef restoration had to start somewhere, and so they took a bit between their teeth and did it off their own back. So to date,
yes,
not a dollar from the government. It's all been financed on the back of partnerships,
yes,
with tourism industry, the use of vessels and in-kind type of arrangements. And we've got sponsorships from corporations, and there's a donate button on our website.
That's the power of people, eh?
That's been busy, and on occasions we'll have someone contact us and say, we really like what you're doing. Here's $10,000 US.
Fantastic. The old phrase, build it and they will come, so to speak.
Exactly.
Fantastic. When you look at the Great Barrier Reef, look, one of the largest thing on planet Earth, look, great for industry as in regarding tourism. It is, like I said, the largest living thing on planet Earth. How is the Great Barrier Reef in regard to its life and how it's going in the future?
Well, it's a relatively new phenomenon, I guess. The mass coral bleaching that we've seen over the last 20 years, really. You could probably trace the first one back to 1982, but then there's a big gap until 1998. And since 1998, the coral bleaching events have become more frequent and more widespread. So the trajectory is not good. But I think that there's a lot that can be done at the global scale, obviously, with the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. And it'd be interesting to see what a post-COVID world looks like in that context.
Sure.
There's also a lot that can be done on a regional level in terms of the control of crown of thorns starfish and improvement of water quality flowing out of coastal catchments. And there's believed to be a link between those two things. But at the local level, there's lots of things that people can do, you know, from your day-to-day life
yes.
To constructive things like reef restoration.
Okay. When you look at talking about coral bleaching for a farmer, a bricklayer, a radio announcer, paint the picture and give us a description of the meaning of a coral bleaching.
Well, coral bleaching is going to mean something different to everybody because people interact with the Great Barrier Reef on a direct level. If you're in the marine tourism industry, or if you're an underwater photographer, or you work in a coastal fishery, for example, it means something different for the person on the street. But they attribute an intrinsic value. It's that idea that it's there. We're privileged to live alongside it, and we have to take a custodial approach to it.
Sure.
So I guess it means that we can all make a difference in our own way. Mm. We can't just sit back and wait for the global industrialised nations to reduce it. We need that to happen, but we can't just sit back and wait for that to happen.
Well, nurture it, respect it, love it, have passion for its longevity, yep?
Absolutely, yep.
That's what it's all about. So in regard to the work that you do as a CEO of Reef Restoration Foundation, where are you steering the ship into the future?
Reef Restoration is very much in a research and development phase. There's many methods that are at use in different parts of the tropical world, ranging from using wire mesh to attract coral larvae to settle on it. Mm. We're using trees where we take fragments of branching corals off a colony that's on the reef.
Okay, now you're moving towards the conversation of offshore coral nurseries?
They're offshore coral nurseries.
Yeah. So we don't take anything out of the water. Yes.
So the model is based on a program in the Caribbean of Fort Lauderdale.
Yes.
Where you take a fragment of a branching coral and you suspend it in the water column on a piece of string or a piece of like fishing wire.
Yep.
In conditions that are more favourable to growth.
Okay.
And then you measure the colony from which you took the frag, and then you have a control colony and you measure the growth rates on the control and on the parent colony to measure whether you've made a difference, like an impact on the reef itself. And then you measure the growth rate on the fragment that you've placed in a more favourable growing condition, and with an anticipation that the growth rate is going to be faster up on the tree. And then you regrow those colonies and plant 50% of them back onto the reef itself, and the other 50% you use as parent colonies to refurbish the tree.
So there's a growth process there. There's a new environment for the coral to grow and expand, yep?
That's right. And the reason we use branching Acropora corals or corals from the Acroporidae family, not only Acropora, is that they're the fastest growing species.
Okay.
And they're also a pioneer species on a reef. So as they grow, they create structural complexity that creates more surface area for future coral larvae to settle, and it also creates cryptic habitat for invertebrates and small fish to inhabit, and you start building up the trophic levels that then attract larger piscivorous fish.
Fantastic. Now let's talk about the so-called enemy you mentioned earlier, crown thorn starfish.
Yeah, crown thorn starfish. It's a natural part of the ecology, but when conditions suit it, when you've got elevated sea surface temperatures and you have runoff of dissolved inorganic nitrogen.
Because they kill coral, don't they?
They eat coral.
They eat coral, yep.
In particular, the faster growing Acropora corals are things that create the habitat and the cement.
The crown thorn starfish has always been in the water, hasn't it?
It's a part of the ecology, but under certain circumstances, when you have those conditions come together, warmer water inputs from the land, water quality, then you have increased larval settlement of the baby cots.
Okay.
And you don't have the same level of predation because you've got more of them. And then as they grow up, you end up with an infestation.
So what would be the cause of that? A global climate? Farming, stuff coming from the land into the ocean, all the above?
All the above,
yeah. Yeah, okay, right.
So
yeah.
the the climate gives you the elevated water temperature, and then you have wet season flooding that takes chemicals off the land, not only agriculture but also urban areas and industrial areas. It all goes into the mix.
Yes.
But it's the scientists believe it's the link is between dissolved inorganic nitrogen and elevated sea surface temperatures, creating an environment for higher primary productivity.
Now, we've known for marine biologists taking on the crown of thorns starfish, which you get diving out there and killing it. Is that right?
That's right.
And what are they using to kill the starfish?
I'm not quite sure what they're using at the moment. They were using ox bile at one point, but I think that when it was decided to scale up the activity, really throw some resources at it, then they found a different means.
Yeah, sure. Not quite sure. And when they're killing, they're taking them out of the water?
I'm not sure, actually.
No? Okay, right, yeah. Sure. Yeah, just looking after, well, we're protecting the reef, and you're the new CEO of Reef Restoration Foundation, so I'm getting educated as well in regard to the conversation we're having. But look, it's COVID-19 is upon us. The tourist industry has struggled in regard to COVID-19. There's light at the end of the tunnel. They have different cruise companies now slowly doing their day trips out to the reef and getting locals to support them. It's uncharted waters, so to speak, that we're all living in. And I don't know, light at the end of the tunnel. How do you feel about that, Ryan?
Well, you've got to hope that the domestic market comes to the tropics. It's yes. It's a good time of year for a southern traveller to come to Queensland and to get out on the Great Barrier Reef.
Yes. Support cases, the local operators, yep.
But with cases in Victoria and to a lesser extent New South Wales, that the future remains uncertain.
Exactly. So we need to just do our bit in regarding to abiding by the rules. There's no vaccine for the virus. And for all the local mob up here in Far North Queensland, take the fan mat, do a trip out to the reef. That's a way of supporting this industry. Look, congratulations once again on your new appointment there, Reef Restoration Foundation, CEO, Ryan Donnelly. Thank you very much and all the best to you and your team. And enjoy that journey, my friend.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
All right, fantastic. A beautiful yarn there. That's Ryan Donnelly. He's the new CEO of Reef Restoration Foundation and looking after the reef and working with our reef operators as a party of different industry leaders involved in the Reef Restoration Foundation, and which is the phrase they're running with in regard to COVID-19. We are all in this together, and that means a lot more in regard to the Reef Restoration Foundation. So fantastic. Have you saying yarn up strong here on Deadly Program National Talk Black. Yana with the ball around Trevor Tim, 20 Trev, Murray from Recurry, taking right through 12 noon Queensland time. Plenty of time, 11:18. Have your say and yarn up strong. Don't worry, be happy. Black Butler Music, do enjoy.
Rob. This is Tanya Kernaghan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service, and you can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Yeah, we are upside down at the moment regarding the world we're living in. COVID-19 still upon us in regard to no vaccine for the virus. So we just need to abide by the rules, and in regards to the rules that are in place in regards to keeping 1.5 metres away from each other, constantly washing our hands and do what we need to do to stay safe. Now, our beautiful countrymen down there in Victoria are struggling in regard to the second wave, as well as New South Wales. And look, we're going to have a chat to the CEO of Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service, VALS, and her name is Narita Waite on the line. Narita, very good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you. It's a bit tough in our house down here in Victoria, but it's great to be speaking to you.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming to the program. Look, first of all, who your mob? Where are you from, sis?
I'm from Yorta Yorta Country, but I also have tie lines into South Australia, New South Wales.
Beautiful.
From my grandfather's side.
Lovely. Thank you very much. Now, the world that we're living in at the moment, COVID-19, but also our thoughts, our hearts, going out to our beautiful men and women who are incarcerated. Now, the government's decision over the next few days and weeks are critical to containing the spread of COVID-19 in prisons, youth detention centres and across Victoria. Can you explain and tell us how things are going at the moment regarding our mob incarcerated, please?
Certainly. So we're seeing continual reports from Corrections Victoria around COVID-19 positive cases from prisoners, and then also more commonly from prison officers coming into those prisons and educators who come into our youth prisons, which, you know, as you can imagine, in an environment like a prison, once COVID-19 is in, there's a real risk of it spreading like wildfire.
Exactly.
You know, our mob in prison have limited access to masks and hand sanitizer. They're compromised in their ability to protect themselves from COVID-19. Things that we can do to protect ourselves right now about, you know, hand sanitizing, having a mask, maintaining distance, they can't do that.
Are the prisons and detention centers, are they in lockdown at the moment?
Yes. So there originally there were 6 prisons and 2 youth prisons on lockdown. That's now been eased because the results thankfully came back around 4 of those prisons being COVID negative. But our 2 youth prisons have been in lockdown since Sunday, and those kids have been confined to their room, Trevor, just by themselves.
Mm. Have you heard? And what about the prisoners themselves? They can probably understand the situation regarding COVID-19. You know, but being in prison is not a good place to be. But then being in lockdown for a period of time, then that's not good on the soul, on the mind, on the spirit. How are they going?
Yeah, because we understand the mental effects that this would bring for our mob in prison, we've been doing welfare checks on them. You know, giving them a call either via phone or via video just to have a chat and make sure they're okay. But they're really suffering in there mentally in terms of the strain this is putting on them, because not only do they have the worry about their loved ones outside in community and not being able to support them, but they also know that they can't protect themselves from COVID-19 in their environment. You know, they're overcrowded, they have substandard hygiene practices, they have poor healthcare services.
Sure.
And a lot of them have high-risk health conditions, like many of our mob outside, as you would know, Trevor, like diabetes, heart disease, respiratory conditions.
Exactly. So it's a double whammy for our brothers and sisters who are incarcerated. Here we are on the outside, and when we're in isolation, frustrating. But look, that's probably a minimum word to use in regarding to our mob incarcerated, yes?
Yeah, I mean, it's soul-destroying for them, but also for their families on the outside. We've had mothers and elders ringing completely distressed about their loved ones inside and feeling as though that they're at real risk of having their loved one die in custody because they can't be adequately protected from COVID-19. And you can just imagine how soul-destroying
yes.
that is day in, day out for those families.
And is there any talk about people on minor charges releasing them in this time, or that's not at the table at this point in time?
We haven't seen much progress from the Andrews government on taking some urgent steps to reduce the number of people detained in prisons in juvenile centres. And in our view, there are five simple ways that they can do that. One is granting administrative leave on health grounds to those most at risk of COVID-19 mm-hmm. and most impacted by the restrictive measures, like what we're talking about in terms of solitary confinement.
Yes.
Number two, using existing legal powers to grant 14 days early release to people in prison who are close to the end of their sentence.
Yep.
And that's particularly important, Trevor, because there are high percentages of our mob who actually spend less than 21 days in prison.
Yes.
So could you imagine the difference that such a simple measure like that could make in terms of protecting them from COVID-19? Number three, again, really sensible, grant parole or leave to people in prison who pose a low risk to the community for release. And, you know...
Well, when we're talking about minor charges, yeah, it's something that the government should look at.
Oh, definitely. And then just think about, you know, extending that to our kids and young people who are in youth detention facilities who have been locked in their room since last Sunday. You know, they should be granted parole so they can go back home to mob and be supported, where actually they'll probably have a better chance of addressing the underlying cause of their offending so that they can actually have a prosperous life rather than one that sees them transition from youth to adult prison fairly quickly.
Sure.
And another one that we think is just, I mean, it's long overdue, is just making bail more accessible for children, young people and adults on remand who are yet to be found guilty of any criminal offending and who pose a low risk to the community if released. Many of our people commit crimes of poverty. So you're talking there about shoplifting and like offences. But because, you know, a lot of them are transient, they don't have a home, they're couch surfing, they're living on the streets.
Exactly.
All the time they can't turn up to court. And then that means that they then can't get bail in future instances, and that's not found anywhere.
And probably a heavy conversation regarding we're about to release you 3 weeks prior to your time finishing or month, whatever the case may be, but this is the reason, COVID-19 and what have you, but you've done wrong and you've been incarcerated because of that. Take on board that the fact that we're releasing you to get your life right, you know, like have a pep talk, so to speak, is what I'm thinking.
Exactly, and there are so many Aboriginal services and mainstream services who can wrap around these people so they can be supported in community.
Exactly. Yes.
And it's time to take advantage of that framework while we have it. And, you know, for those out there who are wondering, well, you know, isn't it a bigger risk to have them released into community for COVID-19 rather than having them in? Well, no. Mm. As people churn through the criminal legal system on a daily basis, the risk of COVID-19 spreading extends to the broader community. Mm. You know, many people come and go from prisons, including prison staff, contractors, health professionals and educators. And as a result, not only is there opportunity for COVID-19 to enter prison, but there's also the opportunity for it to be spread to the wider community. So we're all at risk by doing nothing at this point.
Well, exactly. And I've known that prisons have been described as a stationary a ruby princess, so to speak. If it went through the prisons and detention centres, like you said, it could go like wildfire.
Exactly. And that's the thing that I really urge the Victorian government to consider, is that they need to do something now to save lives in prison. We're seeing what's happened in the US with the horrible loss of life as a result of COVID-19 entering the prison system, and we don't need to see death in custody here.
Well, great to have someone like you holding the reins there as the CEO of Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service and communicating with the authorities above and protecting our mob incarcerated. Thank you very much for your conversation, my sister. All the best to you and your team and your family. You stay safe, Narita.
You too. Thank you for your time. Bye.
Bye-bye. A deadly yarn there with Narita Waite, her name is, CEO of Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service, acronym VALS, and talking about the government's decision over the next few days and weeks are critical containing the spread of COVID-19 in prison youth detention centres and across Victoria. So a very important conversation there, and watch the space looking after our mob incarcerated. And so many things need to be done. And that's across the country and across the globe for people who are incarcerated. Like I said, the description of the stationary Ruby Princess in that sense, you know. If it would go through a detention centre or a prison, it could travel like wildfire. So our thoughts are going out to our mob incarcerated. Add to the conversation here on National Talk Black, your mob to Delhi. That number here is 1-800-422-416. Yarnum with the Bully on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Macquarie, and I'm based at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns. BBM Bummer Group Media, 98.7 FM. Go across the nation, thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Give me a call as ever, Yarn, 1-800-422-416.
G'day folks, Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son. Drive it.
Yeah, to Delhi. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, your mob. 1-800-422-416 is the magical number. Call the number, Yarn of yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, taking right through 12 noon Queensland time for your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say. Otherwise, text the brother 045-714-0550 and our Facebook page as well, BBM987FM. All right, State Library Galleries reopened with new exhibition, which tackles Cook's legacy. We're going to catch up a yarn there with Damien Webb. That is head of the State Library's Indigenous Engagement Team online. Damien, a very good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm very well. Thanks for having me.
No, brother, thank you very much for coming to the program. First of all, who your mob were you from, Damien?
Palawa, so south east coast of Tassie.
All right, fantastic, brother. A different world we're living at the moment, COVID-19, we're looking at the State Library's galleries open and reopen with a new exhibition. So tell us about the new exhibitions happening there with you, Mob.
Yeah. So I think we all thought this kind of Cook 250th anniversary was going to be the big deal this year, but COVID definitely took the spotlight. So we were planning to actually open this back in April to line up with the actual days that the Endeavour was parked and starting to come ashore and come in, but instead we had to launch an online version and just in the last few weeks we've been able to finally open the
Our ancestors would look at the our spirit, their spirits working strong in regard to the true story of, you know, of what happened in Cook's so-called legacy, yes?
Exactly, yeah. And for me, I mean, you know, I'm a Palawa man from Tassie. I've been told, you know, most of my life that I'm extinct, so I'm very used to what it's like to just see yourself and your ancestors removed from history.
Yes.
So I really wanted to try and take a chance to remind people that this was a real thing that happened to real sovereign Gweagal people, that these 8 days, that it was only 8 days. I think a lot of people think Cook was... A lot of people think he came with the First Fleet, that he was here for a long time. Just reminding people that this event, you know, was something that really did happen to elders and people that were there, and they remember it. And speaking with elders about, you know, the legacy, and looking at the protest in 1970 that was arranged in Sydney for the 200th anniversary. And then they still weren't really talking about Cook then. They were talking about land rights. And the problem with Cook is that he becomes the centre of every conversation when he really is just this guy that appeared for 8 days and disappeared again.
So we're talking 1 week, 1 day, you know what I mean? And other thing is that the education for the last 230-odd years has been about him, but not the other side, as in First Nation people. And we'll always tell our story, will we not?
Precisely, yeah. And to be able to use a platform like the State Library to really tell that story.
Yes.
And it's not about being anti-Cook. I mean, I've got my own personal opinions on Cook, but really it's about... I think that the line that we went with for the exhibition, which actually states that it was the Gweagal people that discovered Cook and the Endeavour, really upset a lot of people, a lot of non-Aboriginal people. They really, really are very protective of the idea that our mob were just kind of clueless and wandering around naked waiting to be discovered when, you know, they saw Cook coming from the furthest point in Victoria, well, what we now call Victoria, and these fires followed that ship all the way up the coast. They didn't necessarily know exactly what it was, but they knew something was coming.
Sure.
And then these two men that went down to the shore, very famous, you know, paintings of them ochred up with their shields. You don't wear ochre for no reason, you know.
Exactly.
You don't wander around painted up. You do that for special occasions. So these reminding people that we not only saw these white people coming, but we were prepared to actually deal with them seriously and figure out what they wanted and perhaps actually have a dialogue. But instead, Cook and his crew kept pushing forward and shot one of the elders and more or less kind of set the blueprint for how Europeans were going to deal with our people for the next 250 years.
Exactly. And when you're talking 8 days in here to save you, so to speak, we've been operating for 60,000 odd years. How we say, Johnny come lately, yeah?
Yeah, exactly, right? And this idea that people seem to think that, you know, because the first fleet happened and colonisation happened 18 years later, but nobody knew that at the time, especially not this Gregor mob. They weren't, you know, sitting around for looking at their watches going, no. Oh, we've got 18 years left. This was just one thing, and the elders that have stories passed down talk about a boat. They don't talk about Cook, because we didn't know Cook was on the boat. You know, we didn't know his name. Seeing that boat for the first time was the big deal, and if that horrible invasion and colonization hadn't happened 18 years later, the ways that we would talk about that history would be very different. It'd just be this weird time that a boat rocked up and some crazy guy shot an old man. But it becomes part of this kind of inevitable story white Australia tells itself, that we were always going to be colonized by someone, when that's just really not the case.
Exactly. And I've always said that Australia's got a history, black or white, good or bad, but the history is a history, and history need to be told. But look, both sides of the history, yes?
Yeah, exactly. And it's actually more interesting when you bring both sides. Yeah. It's a lot of nonsense that's built up around Cook, but it's actually much more, you know, most of the people on his ship were boys, were between, you know, like 16 and 24. These are very young boys. But this wasn't like a, you know, super prepared, amazingly crude, you know. There was no one on there that was even mildly prepared to deal with another culture and another language. Like, this what they weren't ambassadors. They were kind of thrust into this situation.
Let the bullets talk.
Yeah, and that's what they did.
Exactly.
They tried bullets and giving out beads, things that they used on most Indigenous people. Gregor Mob didn't want any part of either.
exactly. Damien, let's talk about the exhibition. So 8 days in Khmer, is that right?
8 days in Khmer, yes. So there's kind of three sections to it.
Okay.
One section we're looking at, so we've borrowed a lot of artworks from Aboriginal artists that have responded to Cook's legacy. So, the famous one, we call them pirates out here, the Boyd with Cook in the eye patch. Kyla Dickens has created some of these amazing kind of sculptures out of old Cook rum models. So really looking at how Aboriginal people have processed that history and how we deal with the weight of that legacy. And the second section looks at the actual 8 days and what happened. So that brings in all of the Cook Journal, the Endeavour Journals, but actually puts them alongside Gregor knowledge and photographs of country. So you're actually being reminded that these men in 8 days didn't actually understand as much as they thought they did.
Sure.
That these plants and things have significance and use far beyond what Banks or Parkinson were able to sketch.
So we're talking about telling the story, isn't it, you know, and outside the story. The 8 days in Khmer is the exhibition, free exhibition that is, and operating from till when, sorry?
It's actually going to be open till the end of February next year, because we're pretty sure there might be another lockdown at some point, so hopefully people will have the chance. But there is an online exhibition with a lot of the same oral histories and material as well.
Oh, fantastic. Your team there, how you've been operating over COVID-19? Operating from home or back in the library?
Yeah, we're mostly working from home. The libraries, the only people really going into library at the moment.
Sure.
The people needed to keep the doors open and bring people some of the materials. So, no, it's been a challenge.
Yes.
But most of the team is either with their family or on country, so it makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you very much for sharing, my friend. All the best to you, Damien. You take care, and all the best to your staff, your crew, and your family. Stay safe, my friend.
Thanks. You too, brother.
Bye, bro.
a beautiful yarn there. Damien Webb, his name is, head of New South Wales State Library Indigenous Engagement Team, and talk about the 8 Days in Khmer. That's the free exhibition at the State Library of New South Wales, Macquarie Street, Sydney. So, yeah, if you need to get educated, yep, go along and check it out. And how you say, hear both sides of stories. And that's a beautiful exhibition happening free of charge, so do check that out. Have your say, Yarn Up Strong. It's 11:42 in sunny North Queensland. So about 18-odd minutes ago for a yarn here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. That's the number you need to call. Yarn with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Nakari, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. And we've got Cross the Nation, thanks to NIRS, National News Radio Service. And we're housed at the First Nation Radio Station in Cairns. BBM, Bama Bipra Media, 98.7 FM, Too Deadly.
Talking on the air, trying to start a conversation. Looking at each other, ask, is anyone listening? To us or what? Man, the speed is up. When I need to get my fix of music again, I tune into 97.3 FM. Kicking back in the studio, yeah. That's the way to go. Shout out to Naina, Boogerman Radio. 4816, it's the Boogerman Chicks. 97.3, you can listen to me. 4770-1863. For requests or announcements, you can call us. Peace.
Introducing the black, yellow and red corner. Coming out of the Palm Island Boxing Club. Golden Gloves champ, state title champ, and Australian champ. No beat.
It's the Silky Babe, aka the Aussie champ. Yeah. Boston chicken heads when I'm coming through your camp. Lamp's got nothing to do with the shit that I do. When I come through, I ruin your crew. Head put your freaking forehead to the back of your skull. To your head, make your eyes go dull. Uppercut a piece of scum, make your body go numb. Got you running down the road, scared, looking for your mom. 4816, it's the Boogerman Chicks. Knock your head, hit you harder than a ton of best of bricks. Yeah. 1, 2, 3 titles under the belt. Better recognize Silky or you're gonna get dealt.
You cannot beat them, you may as well join them. Show them who's bloody men.
G'day, this is Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7. I
remember the day. Yeah, too deadly. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. Deadly number here, 1-800-422-416. Give me a call, have your say in Yarn Up Strong. Live in First Nation radio station here in Cairns, BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. And your host, the Bully One, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. I'm taking her up to 12 noon Queensland time. 12 minutes ago, you mob, so squeezing the yarn and have your say. Like I said, we don't have a vaccine for the virus, so we need to abide by the rules that are in place. And there is a national coronavirus helpline number, 1-800-020-080. The number again, 1-800-020-080. If you've got any queries or any concerns, give them a call and stay up to date by visiting australia.gov.au and download the COVID Safe app on your phone so you'll be connected if you are exposed to coronavirus. Follow the hashtag keep. Poor mob safe on social media. We'll keep our mob safe, on social media. Not poor. We're not poor. We're rich in personality, rich in love, rich in culture. That's who we are, your mob. So have your say and Yarn Up Strong. Add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. Keep our mob safe, your mob. Let's go to Heart, Mind and Soul with John Rowland's Gentle Heart. Do enjoy.
Like the words from a million love songs, like the promise of treasure untold. You're loving me through life's journey, gives meaning to my heart, my mind and my soul. Don't you know your touch on my skin and the smile from the light of your eyes lifts me up to where I should be, and your call of my name keeps me high. No matter where I travel, your presence always lingers with me as I face the battles of living with the scent of your body on me. I don't know of the time. Should it be only one day, I will live with the grace of your loving, and my breath, you're forever with me. Don't you know your touch on my skin and the smile from the light of your eye lifts me up to where I should be, and your call of my name keeps me high. Like the words from a million love songs, like the promise of treasure untold. You're loving me through life's journey, gives meaning to my heart, my mind and my soul.
Yeah, Heart, Mind and Soul, John Rowland's Gentle Heart here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, your mob, 1-800-422-416. Going to catch up with Soul on the line. Soul, good morning.
Good morning, your brother. Brother, if anybody want to know the chances of seeing a hairy man or the scareback mob, of seeing a dandy man, they have more chances of seeing him now than to see black fellows and white fellows. walking around with a Bronco and a cowboy jersey.
True that. True that.
Too deadly. But I'm not picking history. We all have a history, brother. Mm. I was good. You know, like, the first, they talk about White Lives Matter, and that's what the bombers at Cooktown done. You know, the first, when Endeavour was there, and they showed the White Lives Matter. But, you know, like, I reckon the white people, they sort of cherry history. They don't tell the other part.
No.
They recognize each other's humanity. But they went up to Boston Island, Possession Island, and they said, there's nobody here, brother.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I thought I had not McLean that song, that Mulgaman, but Palmer and their brother. It's a hip hop song that he just played. But it would have been good to have that song, like a stadium down in that new stadium, NRL stadium in Townsville. But I go back to that in the 90s, early 90s, middle 90s, when they had a tough man contest here in Cairns, their brother, and Yarraba Boxer. He won that, or the Autumn Fathers of. Robbie, the chairman. Chairman's last name. Brother, Mayor, sorry, at Yarraba. What's his last name? Forgotten.
Hey, Andrew Ross. Rossi Andrews.
Oh, no. Robbie Stafford.
Stafford, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, like Anthony Mundine and the Yarraba dancers that went in there. It's too sterile, brother. And a recovery mob went in the ring, and I think corner man was Tim O'Shane. And down the card for the... Costa Zoo's son and Orn's younger brother Ben is Patrick Clark from Palm Island, brother, and he's gonna be fighting in the undercard. Good to have that song. Good to have the song. Nobby Clay, there, brother. When he does, 2026, I think, August 26th, yeah, brother.
August 26th, yep.
Yeah, NRL Stadium down in brother. Yeah, brother, that's all,
right,
brother. Thank you very much, brother.
Too deadly. Thank you very much, brother. That's someone there having his say here, Yarn Up Strong here on National Talk Black. We have 6 odd minutes to go. Your mob's squeezing the yarn here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. Let's go to Deadly Double B Baker Boy.
I don't need no butler cleaning cutlery. Never found me slipping under muddy trees. Never power tripping trying to find a seat. Cause love and heaven fund is always funding me. And I don't envy millionaires who drop a million, a couple million stairs. I'm just high on life, I just might keep it 100 till they cannot delight. Got me feeling like damn, that me out got action. Walking on the beat with the fashion. God damn, all real, no plastic. Bad boy, black magic. God damn, not breaking a sweat. Walking with the bounce in my step.
Daddy, daddy, dee. That's Baker Boy here on your daily program, National Talk Black. I believe we've got someone back on the line. Someone?
Yep.
Brother, go ahead. Someone? All ears here, bro. Lost you there. Call me back, someone. We've got about 4 minutes, my brother. Have your say. You might be on up strong. 1-800-422-416. Trendy Trevor and the mic taking you right through 12 noon Queensland time, a 1 hour program. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS. And we come from the First Nation radio station here in Cairns, BBM Bumper Brip Media. We'll just try again with we got Greg on the line. All right, Greg, good morning.
Trendy Trev, how you doing?
I'm good, my brother. How are you travelling?
Good.
Excellent.
Hey, I had a listen the other day. We were on community radio for a little bit, and they interviewed a guy in the States by the name of Dr. Dyson. He's got a PhD in culture.
In culture, yep.
which leads into, you know, the reasons for racism and the whys and wherefores. And it's something that you possibly might be able to research a little bit yourself. He got his degree in Princeton University.
Mm-hmm. And it's all about culture. He's a doctor in culture, you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. And he talks about, you know, different races and, you know, why we have racism. Mm. You know, and so what he says is that white people get around, we don't call ourselves white, we're just doing what we do, we're just people.
Mm.
But for whatever reason, he brought it back to education as well, you know, like he gets letters and stuff that, you know, says, oh, he's a nigger and all this sort of stuff. He says, look. Of another human being.
Mm.
You've said it before. Don't be ignorant.
Exactly.
You know, have a look at your fellow man. Mm. We're all made by the one maker.
Sure.
We've all got the same blood. You know, you cut our skin, don't matter what the colour is.
Mm.
The
exactly.
Same blood.
Exactly. Well, I always say life is simple. People complicated, brother.
It's a very, very good, very important conversation, and it can't be covered in 2 minutes, but maybe it's something we could do for later on.
Sounds good, my brother.
Have a great day.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you all.
Too deadly. Thank you, Brother Greg. Thank you for that. I'll try and go and chase up that information. Dr. Dyson, so he's a doctor of culture. I'd like to see where he's coming from. Fantastic. Murray, going to sign off here, Mob. I'm back in the hot seat again tomorrow. That deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Got the news here coming up very soon. And look, thank you for your company. Stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. More importantly, stay safe, you Mob. Too deadly. Yarn up strong.
Lumberjacker, my name is Jeddah. I come from the Wurundjeri and the Kalkadoon people. Celebrating our culture is important for us kids so we can grow up strong and be who we want to be. That's why on August 4 we celebrate Children's Day.
We are the animals of tomorrow. Hear our voice.
Go to aboriginalchildrensday.com.au.
Songs of our time, teachers of our story.
This message is sponsored by Snake National Voice for Our Children.